Live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and David Garrard.
Fat Tony in the house as well. Maybe not the best week to play a highlight involving a block kick to end a game. Really? You know, I mean, that one, that wound is still fresh. Fresh for me last night, too. I mean, seriously, was that, I mean, wasn't that remarkably similar? Just, the flow of the game wasn't the same. But driving down in the end there and giving themselves a chance, had the onside kick attempt, even though it didn't work. 58-yard field goal is a lot to ask to win a game last night. But were it not for Josh Scobie getting it blocked, you made a great point, Dave. Last night, it was Chris Jones,
yeah.
Right? The guy who got the penalty for illegally vaulting over the line or whatever it was.
Landing on somebody's back or something.
Yes. Yeah. You know, the dangerous play aspect of it, and that extended the game and cost him the game ultimately. And he got the big paw up last night, and he was the hero.
He did. And, you know, Nick Folk is a really good kicker, you know, so... I actually expected him to make that kick last night.
He was nailing him last night. By the way, if you watch the game, F-O-L-K, is that now pronounced Falk, like Marshall Falk? Because that's what Jim Nance called him the entire night.
I've always heard it Falk.
I always thought it was Falk, too.
We call him Falk Hero.
Right, he was calling him Falk all night. He was driving me kind of cuckoo. But nevertheless, how you doing, man? Everything good?
Everything is great. I'm doing wonderful. I'm so happy to be here today.
Here's the difference, Tony, with David Garrard sitting in here with us, mm-hmm. as opposed to when we walk down the hall and would interview him in the Jaguar locker room. See, now... he'll tell you, you know what, 0-6, I just can't pick him. If Dave were on the other side,
and you a totally different story.
You would say, none of y'all thought we could win?
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, no, we think you could, but you got to prove to us that you can. And
well, when you're on the other side of the coin, you can never come off, yeah, we got a tough one this week, and I don't see us coming out on top. You always got to have that glimmer of hope. You always got to give... the illusion, like you do, and even in your mind, you might think, you know what, it's not looking
too
good.
You gotta project confidence.
But absolutely, because if you don't do it, then who else will?
I got that point, and I totally get that. As a team, you gotta, you know, if you don't think you can win, why show up? Why are you playing the game? But the looks you would get in the locker room after a surprise victory, an upset victory, right, over the years, y'all didn't think we could win, y'all didn't pick us up. Okay, look at your record up to that point, or look at how you've been playing, or look at the matchup, or whatever the case may be. I always found that always amusing to me, how the indignation that they'd have in the locker room. But
it's us against the world.
It's a fresh week, man. They can win. I mean, they certainly can beat the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, they
do. I don't think anybody will be stunned if they beat the Cleveland Browns. It's not like, you know, if the Broncos were rolling in, you'd be shocked if they beat Peyton Manning and company right now. I would, anyway. But, you know, like you said, show us at this point.
This is definitely a game where they can win it. I mean, either team, it just all matters what team shows up on both sides of the ball. What team shows up, if the Jaguars come out on offense like they did last week, they have a great chance. But the defense has to show up. Special teams has to show up. And then, but also, I think, too, Cleveland's actually a pretty good team. You know, I think if our team shows up and their team shows up, I think they still have an edge.
Well, and here's the thing. The Jags, if they start like they did last week, but they have to sustain that, right? I mean, they got the big play to Clay Harbor that got them rolling. And by the way, talk with Clay Harbor. You'll hear that interview on the pregame show, on the Public's Tailgate show coming up this weekend. But not enough explosive plays for this team. And right now, and hopefully that will change over time, but it's very difficult. It's difficult for any team, I'm sure you know, to go 8 to 12 play drives time after time, and the field position never worked in their favor last week.
Yeah, you know, exactly. That's a great point right there. And I think, too, that when you have a young team, it's hard for guys to get up and then keep pouring it on. And even for a veteran team somewhat, but usually when you have a veteran team and they get up and then the other team starts to come back, they do something there to get themselves back on top or to extend the lead just enough to where, you know, it's making it tough for the other team. Sometimes, not sometimes, a lot of times this year, the Jags have gotten up, but they have a hard time keeping it to that point or even extending it a little bit. And I think that's just because young guys don't have anything to fall back on and saying, okay, this drive, we have to do something here, even if it's just getting 3 points a lot of times, where they get behind after being up and they kind of get shocked a little bit and they have a hard time. They start kind of scurrying around trying to figure out what do we do now, what do we do now? And then that ultimately, you know, kind of is their downfall because now they're kind of panicking a little bit and they don't show that they're panicking, but you can feel that they're panicking because they're not putting any points back on the board. And that's where a young team gets you hurt and gets you beat.
I don't get a great sense that there's, you know, a division between offense, defense here. Like the defense is like, here we go again. Cause this team hasn't scored more than 17.
Yeah.
The defense has played better the last couple weeks, but I don't think they've laid enough of a body of work out there to be pointing any fingers. It's not like since, you know, the first, because the offense could go back to week one, you say, hey, we're upset, we spotted you a 17-0 lead, and you let them come roaring back in the second half. I don't sense that there's too much discontent. And that is one thing, and for all the people say, you know, Gus Bradley's positivity and all this stuff is great, but we need wins, and I get it, but there is something to being able to keep a locker room together when you're off to a bad start. 0-8 last year, the fact that they were even able to be in position psychologically to win four of the next five games and believe they could do it, I think it's a tough thing to accomplish in the NFL.
Yeah, the way the defense has played throughout the first part of this season, there is no way they can sit back and say, all right, offense, we've been playing our butts off. We've been doing our thing out here. You guys aren't living up to your... But there's no way they could sit in the locker room and actually look in the mirror and say that that's possible because they have played better the last 2 weeks, but that's just 2 weeks. You know, we played quite a few ball games here and both sides. So that's why it's more of a team letdown. It's offense letting them down with turnovers. It's defense that has let them down with letting teams go down the field, score with players wide open. And yes, they have gotten better, but both sides have gotten better the past 2 weeks. Now they still got offense still has to put up more points, but then you can also still say defense, you got to shut them down some more. I mean, it's a team effort. And where is special teams? I haven't seen any big plays whatsoever from those hidden plays. You call them hidden plays because hidden points because those aren't expected or just hidden yards. Like give us some change the field for us. Like you said last week, we played with the worst field position the whole game. Like we never had the start of the ball on their side.
Never started outside their own 20-yard line until the onside kick.
And that's terrible, you know, because you're expecting your return game to get you, you know, 15 yards at least some point in time to where you get the ball at like the 40-yard line as opposed to always starting on the 20. And the punt return game, I think, has to continue to get better. They have Ace Sanders returning the punts. We thought that would be the thing that helped the punt return out a little bit, but it really hasn't, you know. And I think sometimes he's going east and west too much as opposed to just hitting it and getting that hidden 6 yards in there where he's trying to do so much sideways that he's only getting 1 or 2 yards or going backwards as opposed to hitting it. And sometimes you can break that arm tackle that squirts you through for another 20 yards and
he's looking for the 60-70
yard
return.
Yeah, but you can also tell that he's still getting his flow of the game back, too, because he's been out for so long that even though you're fast, even though you can move and juke and all those things, still the flow of the game is so different, and there's subtle things in there that he will start to get better at as he continues to work and continues to get those reps out there.
All right, we will get into a number of things today. Can the Jags find ways to put more points on the board? Can the Jags take advantage of the absence of Alex Mack in the middle of that Cleveland offensive line? They've been running the ball extremely well this year. We'll look for your keys to victory as well, the Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight, like we do every Friday, asking you for your three keys to victory for the Jaguars to pick up their first win of the season against Cleveland coming up this weekend. Claude Nolan Cadillac brings you the show every Friday. I'm Mike Dempsey along with David Garrard and Fat Tony. You can tweet the show at MD_1010XL, at DavidGarrard9, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Lauren Any, or all of those will get you on board. You can answer the fan feedback spotlight as well at facebook.com/JaguarsToday. Lauren Brooks is along as well. We're live here at Everbank Field, just getting rolling. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. I got no idea what this is.
You don't?
Hence, I have no idea what the theme is.
This is Garth Brooks.
Is it?
Yep.
Is the theme that Garth Brooks is in concert?
The theme is that I finally get to go see Garth Brooks for the first time ever tomorrow night.
That's exciting.
It's exciting for me.
Is
it? I'm sorry if it's not exciting for anyone else.
No, that's cool.
I sent some animosity coming from...
I fixed this yesterday afternoon.
The control room today.
No, I meant in case I was rubbing it in.
The Who for the first time in April.
You know it.
I'm stoked. I bought my tickets last night.
Nice.
Mike, do you have your tickets yet?
I got them yesterday.
Good. Ooh. Are y'all sitting near each other? Do you know yet?
No,
You're going to ask if we're sitting together.
No, I don't think so.
Well, I figured not together.
As like Christmas presents for my friends. And
smart.
Like I texted it to them in case they were thinking the same thing. I like took a picture of the tickets and I texted it all to them. I was like, I know it's October, but Merry Christmas. I didn't want anybody else doing this too. And everyone was just freaking out about the opportunity to go see The Who. So,
David, are you going to see Garth?
Now, when's the concert?
April 19th.
Now, why are they doing tickets so far in advance?
Because it's The Who.
Oh, they're a
greatest rock and roll band of all time.
Celebrating 50 years.
Celebrating 50 years.
50 years? Are they all still alive? Same guys?
Half of them.
Two of them are. The most important two are.
Okay.
In my opinion.
April 19th is a Sunday.
So sorry.
Yeah. No, I do. No. I'm not sorry. There's more room for me. I'll get next
year. There you go.
Hey, Mike, I think you should take April 20th off.
It's
Monday, 4:20. You should take off.
4:20. I'm trying to imply.
I'm implying that that's the day after the Who concert.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Who.
Is that why you only vaguely remember the concert in the 80s?
Trust me. There are a lot of reasons I vaguely remember that concert in the 80s, none of which I'm going to detail for you here.
Wait.
What?
I'm so excited for you to go see them.
Are you?
Yeah. To me, there's nothing better than seeing someone you absolutely love in concert. It's just...
Nothing better.
Nothing better.
All right. That's...
I love football, but you get 16 football games.
That's good. I'm excited about it. I'll enjoy it. I love The Who. Who would you go to see, David Garrard, now that you're looking down your nose at Pete Townsend and company?
I don't know, but it would not be The Who. I remember when they were at the Super Bowl, and I was like,
they were not
why?
Good at the Super Bowl.
What in the world are we doing? Thank you, Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake, for bringing out these guys.
Yeah.
And we had to suffer through that for like 3 years, and finally they're kind of slowly working themselves back.
We got Beyonce last year. It looks like Katy Perry's going to be the halftime. Okay. This year. Did you go see Earth, Wind, and Fire? They were here like last weekend.
I would absolutely go see Earth, and I have seen Earth, Wind, and
Fire.
What
about Garth Brooks tomorrow? You long could go.
No, that's too old country. I like country now, but it's got to be kind of the new age.
New age country?
You like pop country. Shelton.
Pop country, there you go. I don't know.
Isn't Garth Brooks pop country?
No.
He didn't invent pop country? Are you kidding me?
No, he's 90s. Real country.
Country? Yeah. No. Okay.
Like George Strait. He's old. Yeah.
Right. That's exactly what he's not, though. Garth Brooks is not old George Strait.
Well, he was
country.
Probably
Loretta
age.
Lynn is
if,
old
he
country.
Was probably cutting age for the 90s, but I didn't listen to country.
If I know any of their music,
ushered
it's
in the
pop
whole
country.
New generation.
Yeah. Believe, okay. And I know some Garth Brooks music, so I would classify him as pop country.
Yes.
I don't listen to it at all.
Yeah. Yes, he's totally pop country.
But see,
country.
That was the 90s, and I didn't listen to country.
He changed country entirely. He made country listenable to a lot of people.
Yeah. Not so much twang in there. I don't like all the...
Not as much twang.
Yeah.
Right?
I love the twang.
Tell us about the Jaguar. What did you do last night? You had to take off our show to prepare for.
No, yesterday. I took off the show to go to a doctor's appointment.
I know. Play along with
but
the
I,
joke.
But
come
that,
on.
Well, the reason I'm not playing along with the joke is because I wanted to rep or give a little love to JOI, who's been absolutely fantastic so far through this whole process of my lovely dislocated finger. But, yeah, I co-emceed the Jaguar Football Women's 101. So we had Gus Bradley, we had Jed Fish, we had Bob Babich, we had Todd Wash, we had Toby Gerhart, Clay Harbor, Zane Beatles, Carson Tinker, and Dakota Watson. All were there. The ladies got to ask them questions. There was cocktails, a silent auction. The band Be Easy was there. It was a blast.
Did anyone like raise their hand and say, Toby, excuse me, my name is Amy, I'm new to football here, but aren't you supposed to gain yards when you carry the ball?
Are you supposed to stay right at the line of scrimmage and
maybe
dance
I'm
around?
No, not asking this the right way. Did that happen?
That did not happen, but one woman did ask an interesting question. She said, why is spiking the ball not intentional grounding?
Oh. well, it's after the play.
the play has been,
see, that's a good one.
Malone did at that
if
time.
It, if the quarterback did it in the pocket, it might be intentional grounding. It certainly could be intentional grounding, unless
you're spiking it. That means you have to get the snap and go straight to the ground with the ball.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And then you
can't take any drop when you do it.
Not so ever. A little kind of like a half.
Well,
step.
Well, you can
right?
take your. You can bring one foot back so you can.
Right. Give yourself room.
Yeah. Don't spike it right.
I'm going to argue with the quarterback what you're allowed to do when you're spiking the ball. But it went well for you last night.
It did go really well, and Michaela Bradley is awesome. She put all of it on, and all the proceeds went to Jacksonville's Hill Breast Center. So that was good. And I did have several women come up to me, and they said that they are so thankful that our show gets put on demand so that they can go back and listen to it since they're not able to listen at work. No, Jaguars today.
No, that can't be true.
No, it's very true.
I can't believe that.
Absolutely. They also do Helmets and Heels. They also listen to that one too, but they love Jaguars today. So for all those women, thank you for logging on and listening.
The best was Lauren during the pregame last home game. Said, so
oh my
what was it? So
she was like talking to some of the fans.
Yeah, what's your favorite show?
What's your favorite show? And they were like Helmets and Heels.
But the other one, what's your other favorite?
Yeah.
They said the drill.
The drill.
The drill.
didn't you have another one that I just told you to say?
But I didn't tell him to say it. He totally told me before I interviewed him live. He said, I listen to Jaguars today every single day. I said, well, great. I'll ask you about that and I'll ask you what your favorite show is. And then, unfortunately for everyone, they kind of freeze the first time the microphone goes live. And so he's like, Helmets and Heels. And I was like, what else? And I tried to guide him, and yeah, that backfired on me. It did look like I was feeding him information.
He probably looked down and saw that Helmets and Heels tattoo on your forearm. And he's like, I'll just say that. That's what I'm going to go.
I thought you didn't know about that.
Well, it's very
strange.
Dang
it.
I appreciate that, the dedication.
It's raw,
that you've
too.
Given to
don't,
the show.
Don't hit it.
All right, don't. It's covered up in a little
that's right.
cellophane.
We're all like, why is Lauren wearing sleeves all the time?
I know, right? She's going to unveil it at the Garth Brooks concert tomorrow.
Absolutely, with
Which,
everyone else
by the
in
way,
their tattoos.
I just got a text from Paul Spicer. He was like, Garth Brooks is not old country.
No, it's
Garth
not old
Brooks
country.
Pop.
It's totally pop country. Are you kidding
me? For me, it's old country.
Lauren, you were born like after Garth Brooks came along, so you don't
well, first
know.
Of all, I'm not
to
that
you,
young.
It is old country because he's been around since you've been alive.
He started in the 80s. I consider that older country. Not, like you said, Mike, there's a Loretta Lynn's, there's the Johnny Cashes. I mean, Merle Haggard. No one's going to compete with them. But as far as before, what David's talking about are more of the Zach Browns, the Florida Georgia Line.
There you go.
Eric Church, Luke Bryan.
Like 2.5 years ago, so everything before that is old country to me.
If you turned them on, someone...
You guys are hacker, you realize this.
No, someone wouldn't necessarily say it's country.
I wasn't born in 1978. I can't be expected to know what's that.
Oh, no, I love country that's older than me. I love it all. That's why I'll be sporting my cowboy boots, and I'll be very happy tomorrow night.
All right, welcome to Jaguars today.
Yeah.
welcome to
country today.
Welcome to the music, Jacksonville music scene today on the broadcast. All right, good stuff, I suppose, right there. Dave, let's get into a little Jaguar football this weekend. They got Marquise Lee back. Cecil Shorts came through unscathed last week. So wide receiver-wise, they've got the most biggest assortment of weapons that they've had. Certainly they don't have Mercedes Lewis, but... This is as good a complement of players as Blake has had to throw to, or either quarterback has since the beginning of the season.
Absolutely. I mean, you can tell when all the guys are out there how much better they can be. I mean, for Blake to have 336 yards passing, throwing the ball to eight or nine guys out there, spreading the wealth around, that's a great thing when you don't just have one dominant receiver that can get shut down or, you know, isn't being productive that day, and now you're trying to rely on everybody else and they can't hold their end of the bargain up. To have a wealth of receivers, even though they're all young, they all can make plays. I mean, Allen Robinson is going to be a great possession type receiver. He's a big body. You know, he's kind of like a fast tight end that can be in the middle of the field and make those great catches and then also line up out there out wide and make some tough catches for you too on third downs. Those possession receivers really come in handy. And I mean, Clay Harbor really coming out of nowhere to make some great plays. He's wide open on his one long one, but he makes it and you know, runs down the field and does a great job with that. So being able to count on, a plethora of receivers is a great thing as opposed to one or two guys that, you know, now somebody goes out, you know, you're kind of limited now. To have, you know, all the guys healthy, finally, you can kind of see what the future is really going to look like for this this pass catching team.
Still nice to have a Jimmy Smith type out there, though, right?
If you had
a collection like this, and you had that one,
yeah. Now you got that one
guy.
Stud that's, you know, pretty much like a black man. That's your one stud that's not even here. I mean, I hate to bring him up, but yeah. So now when you move forward, you can say, we just need one stud. You don't have to have a bunch of receivers coming in and out like we've had in the past. You can just get one guy in free agency or one guy, you know, you hate to get somebody in the draft again, but that gives you a chance now to say that position is kind of filled. We just need one guy. And if we get that one guy, if we hit on that one guy, now it makes everybody else better. But then now you're starting to cut guys out. You got, you know, four guys.
That's a nice
guys.
Problem to have, though.
It is, because that's going to bring up competition, and your best three or four are going to rise. And now you've got, you know, hopefully the best package of receivers in the NFL. I mean, when I was with the Jets last year and we went and played Cincinnati, they had so many 6'2 to 6'4 receivers that were just flying up and down the field that we said these guys should, I mean, they should have 400 yards passing every game. If Dalton just gets it close to those guys, I mean, A.J. Green, Mohamed Sanu, who I've picked up in fantasy
year.
On both my
He's killing
teams.
It this year.
He is killing it. And last year it was the Jones kid, I think.
Marvin Jones,
who when we played them with the Jets that game, he had like four touchdowns, 160 yards.
He had five.
Maybe five.
He had a five touchdown game.
Five touchdowns. I mean, so when you have just a stable of receivers like that, that makes your quarterback that much better. It makes the offensive line that much better because you don't have to block for so long. You can throw a little screen pass and they take it the distance for you. Those are the kind of receivers that you want. And when you can have multiple ones, it's going to make watching Jaguar football so much better because you can throw it to any of those guys, and they can all make big plays for you.
This is going to be a big test week for Cecil Shorts. Last time he came back the first game of the season, he made it through unscathed, and it was his second game back when he re-aggravated the hamstring. Last week he got thrown to 16 times, caught 10 of them, obviously had the fumble, but was very productive nonetheless. You know, that fumble, you can't take it away. It was a big blemish on the record, but throughout the course of the game, he was the guy that Blake Bortles looked to more than any other, and he, more often than not, delivered for him. So, you know, if he can make it through now and get you past the point where it's in the back of your mind every week that he's just going to re-aggravate something or, you know, sit him down, if he can make it through, I think that's a big plus going forward.
You know, and Cecil really, he really plays well when he is not the featured receiver. When he is the guy that is kind of, he's up there, but he's not, you know, when Blackman was out there, he would really get a lot of balls thrown to him because they had to roll the coverage. They would put their best guy on Blackman. But now that there is, you know, four to five different receivers that are possibly going to get the ball, you can't just, you know, single one guy out. So that's why he can get those many catches and have those many yards because they line him up all over the field. They put him in a slot. They put him outside. Teams can't really roll the coverage to him because Blake is throwing it to three other guys that are making just as many plays. So, but Cecil is that veteran receiver out there. He's that guy that, you know, he usually is pretty steady with catching the ball, and he runs really good routes, I think. And he can make those plays for you. Now, you hate that he had the fumble, you know, at a time in the game where the game's on the line and we're driving right here. What did he fumble? The 15, 10-yard line?
Yeah.
Or something? So you hate for those situations. That's part of football. It happens to everybody. But, you know, it happens to our guys, it seems, too many times. Hopefully he can learn from that. He can, you know, get down, those kind of things. But I look for him to continue to have big games.
All right, if you'd like to get on board, talk with David Garrard, talk a little Jaguar football, 641-1010. That is the number to do it. It's a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. We will continue live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. If you have an issue with your finger, they'll fix it. If you've got any orthopedic issues, they'll fix it right here. It's Jaguars Today, live from Everbank Field on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. More of that pop country that Warren's so fond of right now. Garth Brooks,
Make sure I think he would be insulted.
This is not pop country.
Thank you.
Oh, please.
You're hearing this in some saloon somewhere and a lot of line dancing going on.
Yeah, because saloons now have gotten soft.
Right. I'm sorry, they don't throw beer bottles at the chicken wire.
Chairs over anybody's back anymore.
Roadhouse.
That was the Jeff Healey band, wasn't it? It was the house band.
I don't know.
Roadhouse. I want to say it was.
I don't know.
The guy who sings Angel Eyes, isn't that the Jeff Healey band?
Right. Well, but that music sounds just like what I'm hearing right now.
Yeah, but. I don't know about
with
that.
The chicken wire in front of them.
Yeah, I don't know if they were playing this.
This is one of my favorites. But it's not a Friday unless Mike's calling out saloons.
They are.
Saloons
soft.
Everywhere.
They are a little softer nowadays.
You are. Every single one of you is softer. I'm sure there's some real saloons. So Boot Hill Saloon probably would not be caught dead playing Garth Brooks.
I used to go to 8 Seconds in Gainesville all the time. I loved it. I love line dancing.
Never. It's the 8 seconds. That whole concept is soft because 8 seconds probably refer to some mechanical bull that was popularized by Urban Cowboy, which started the whole softness of saloons.
They have had live bulls in there before.
Am I not right, Tony?
I have no idea.
Come on.
I honestly have no idea. But that you're so passionate about the softness of saloons.
He is very passionate.
We've reached a new high.
I got this one in for a minute ago on Twitter from at Lloyd. What is that? Lloyd 1L, maybe. If I'm reading that correctly. Anyway, he said, I think Blake Bortles will have his best game because the Jags need more rollouts out of him. He thinks so. They'll unleash him. He says, seriously, I've yet to see a bad play when Blake Bortles rolls out. Are they underutilizing that? Are they, I see him escape the pocket a lot, and not all of it is designed, but don't you have to run the ball effectively, to have those rollouts be as effective as you, because you've got to get the defense to respect that play fake that usually starts the rollout play.
It does. But there's some times where you have to do more rollouts to be able to get that run game going a little bit. Like I said before, you have to be more creative in ways to get the run game going. And if that's just throwing the ball outside real quick to the receivers on those receiver screens, that's one way. Getting your running backs in space, throwing screens to them, having them run tunnel screens. There's other ways to get the run game going as opposed to just handing it off and trying to get guys to go downhill. Because it's not there. The holes have been plugged. The offensive line is not getting enough push that you want. And
that's being kind.
Yeah.
What's the biggest culprit? Is it the holes?
It's the offensive line not getting the push. It's the backs not being able to make their own plays. I mean, if you remember back with Mojo, he would just be a guy that he'd hit the line, bounce out, and just cut the ball back, and you'd have a 25-yard game play right there. Because he had the understanding, and he had the sight, he had the playmaking ability to just say, you know what, I know what it should look like. And that's a thing that a lot of people don't understand. With the running back, they have keys that they're reading. They know that if the tackle backside is slid into the A-gap, that it's going to make them bounce out. Or it's going to make them stay front side. There's different keys, and they also know that they can set up their runs, too, by staying hard front side, giving it a second, that's saying being patient, and then cutting the ball back. So, and another thing, running backs know that there's going to be a safety there that they're going to have to put on their hip. They're going to have to run through that arm tackle, and that's that one guy where I think sometimes the backs now are seeing that safety and then trying to just duck into the line, and because there's one guy there that's waiting on him. You got to put that safety on your hip and run through him or run him over or whatever it is or make him miss. And if you have that ability to make that one guy miss, now you got, you know, 15, 20 and even more yards out there. That's one of the things. But yes, the offensive line, they're not opening up very many holes. And when they do open the holes, they close really fast. But you know, there's a lot of different things that could make the run game better. So when I'm watching other teams, I'm looking at them just running through holes. I mean, last night, Chris Ivory was running through some holes that were a pretty good size, but then he was making his own holes sometimes because he runs so angry. He runs so tough. He runs so strong. And that's where, when I was getting on Toby before, you don't see that anger when he's running. You see him running like he's a 220-pound back as opposed to a 240-pound back, you know. So you sometimes you just got to say enough is enough, and you're just going to start running through guys. And even if it's for 3 yards, you're imposing your will on them.
Setting the tone.
Yeah,
sure.
Absolutely.
And we talk about playmakers in this offense, and there isn't a guy right now that they can go to that they know is going to make the big play for them. And I think part of that is, look, they talked about it again this week, 15 missed tackles against Tennessee for this Jaguars defense. Where are the missed tackles for anybody they're playing? I mean, it's not like anybody is running through a tackle to go get that 7 or 8 more yards. I can remember a couple plays last week where one of the receivers, I think Allen Robinson did it once, Cecil Shorts did it once, where they broke through that first tackle to go get 3 or 4 more yards. But there's nobody in the running game right now that first contact, bam, plays over.
Yeah. And that's where I would say that I was, you know, more upset with Toby was he wasn't running through those arms. When you're a big bruising back, you're supposed to be a big bruising back, you should run through 2 or 3 arm tackles on your way to getting 6, 7 yards. But you wouldn't see that. You would see the first contact, he'd go down, and he would go down almost without a fight. And maybe it was because of his knee or his ankle.
Couldn't drive.
Yeah, couldn't power through, but that just makes you look bad when you're supposed to be a big bruising back. And you're right. You see a lot of times where guys will come up on other teams. They would lay a hit on somebody. He would kind of lose his balance, but kind of redirect himself and then still go up and get some yards after it, where you're seeing our guys get contact and they're down right now. And I don't know what it is. I don't know. It's not something that you can teach yards after contact, but you need the playmakers to start stepping up and making these plays where they're running through these arm tackles and getting you another 10, 15 yards after the play.
You know, Chris Ivory is an extreme example, I think, because I do think he embodies that more than most running backs. You know,
Marshawn Lynch is another guy.
Right. There are a few guys like that. They described him last night that Ivory runs like this is the last carry that he will ever have.
Absolutely.
You know, and he really does. I mean, he leaves bodies in his wake. But Maurice would always point out, complain, at times complain about the lack of attention paid to the running game in the preseason. I remember one year in particular, they were trying to get the passing game going here, and I can't remember which season it was, and he just said, you know, it's people don't understand, you just don't show up and run the ball.
Yeah.
Even though it's an instinctive position for the back, it's how you fit with all these guys, and you're talking about all these keys that you read and stuff. I think there's a school of thought, it's pretty prevalent now, that the running game used to be the thing that got going right away in the season because you had all these contact practices. You had, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks of it, and you don't have that anymore. I mean, how much now? Clearly, some teams like Dallas, they come out of the gates, great offensive line play. Doesn't matter. They're blowing guys off the ball. So does it really matter that much, or is it just come down to the physical nature of the guys up front?
It does. I mean, the game is won and lost in the trenches, and the run game is the tone setter. That is, it used to be the tone setter. I mean, now you have guys that, teams that are just passing the ball over the place now, but it used to be the tone setter where you're going to come out and physically, impose your will on the other team. And that's with the run game. You're going to set the tone early where it's not happening nowadays. And like I said, now they're kind of throwing these bubble screens out here to receivers and they're doing the read option with the quarterback. Those are not downhill power run game type runs. They're not more finesse, but they're one backs, you know, in the backfield. You don't see the fullback in the backfield and the two tight ends, those kind of things, saying that we're just going to road grade you right now. I can remember a few seasons where we would play the Colts. Now, they had one of the smaller front sevens in the NFL, but we would just come out, two tight ends, a fullback, and we would just road grade them all the way down the field. And sometimes you've got to get that mentality. And if that mentality is not, your offense, then they don't know what their, that's what I think the Jaguars are right now. They don't know what their mentality is. Are they smash mouth? Are they throw the ball around? I think they're starting to get to, more towards throw the ball around the park,
which honestly, the best player is the guy with the ball in his hands.
Exactly.
Right now,
and they need to do that. But the best thing for a young quarterback is a run game. And just think how much better Blake and the offense would be if the run game was getting them at least 100 yards a game. And that could be, you know, with all the backs, but you know, averaging that 100, 120 yards a game.
I mean, he's on the brink of being the leading rusher for this team this year,
he
and
is.
He's played 3.5 games.
And, that's sad. That's really sad because, I mean, you have running backs. It's not like you're trying to convert, you know, cornerbacks back there to play running back because everybody's gotten hurt. You have actual running backs that have gone through college and have gone through the first parts of the year. So it's not just the running backs, though. If your offensive line is not, you know, it's not necessarily opening the holes, because sometimes as a running back, you have to help the hole get open, and that's why you've got to press things front side to be able to cut through the hole backside. But if the offensive lines aren't getting off the ball, getting up to the second level, and the receivers aren't getting up to the second level and staying on their blocks, we haven't really had many times where the running backs have had to get to the second level. They've always gotten tackled at the line of scrimmage or near the line of scrimmage, and it's unfortunate because Blake and the offense would be so much better if the illusion of the run game was actually a little effective to be able to help him with those play actions. I mean, he's had guys open already, but just think how many more guys would be open if the play action was actually.
Makes it that much more impressive what he's been able to do so far in a short period of time. All right, we got to take time out. When we return, we'll go with the state and football history, the Honda drive around the NFL. Lee Sterling will pop in from Paramount Sports, tell us who he likes on the betting lines this week as well in the National Football League. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with It's Cardinal and Cadillac Friday. You're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. It was October 17th, 1983. Green Bay beat Washington 48-47. It was the highest scoring game in Monday Night Football history. The two teams combined for over 1,000 yards of total offense. I remember that game well. My best friend at the time was a Washington fan. What did that mean I did, Tony? I rooted against them, right? Vigorously. They were 14-2 in the regular season that year, and I believe they lost another game by a single point, and that was the team I think that Marcus Allen went cuckoo on in the Super Bowl, and the Raiders beat them handily, despite the fact that they were within a couple of points of going 16-0 in the regular season. So that was October 17th, 1983, this date in football history. Brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. They're located on Gate Parkway if you need cosmetic work done, or you're just in the market for a family dentist. Maybe you're in the market for that stop snoring mouth guard for you or a loved one. 620-9225 is the number, or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. Dave, before we go on to the Honda drive around the NFL, what was the best team you remember watching growing up? You remember, was there a team in a particular year that you said, man, this 49er team or this whatever, does one stand out to you?
Well, growing up a New York Giants fan, I don't want to say any other team was better than my Giants in the 1990. I mean, to go to the Super Bowl that year, to have Phil Simms go out, and then Jeff Mustache Hostetler come in the game and finish the season, take us to the playoffs, take us to the Super Bowl, and all the memories from that Super Bowl, from Otis Anderson delivering a blow with his forearm to I forget the receiver's name, I think it was Mark Ingram, catching the ball, trying to get this first down, and made half the team miss just to get like three more yards was amazing. And then to come down to a kick at the end of the game, which I heard they ran that kicker, Scott Norwood. They ran him out of town up there in Buffalo.
I don't know if they literally ran him out of town or
No.
They
literally, the people in town ran him out of town. They were harassing him so much that he couldn't stay there.
And Buffalo has this, you know, they want to project this. Oh, it's the greatest city in the world. We just love
no,
the Bills.
No, I heard they ran him out
really?
Of town.
Really? Yes. Did they, like, burn stuff on his lawn?
Yeah,
they're
egging his house, just all kinds of stuff, the whole time harassing his family.
Really?
But I remember laying in the floor, couldn't even watch it. I just had my hands over my head, just thinking, please let something happen to this ball where it does not go through the uprights. And when they said wide right or whatever it was, and he missed it, I went running through the house. My mom is like, what is wrong with you? Because I guess she wasn't watching the game. And I said, the Giants won. The Giants won. She said, be quiet. Go back downstairs and finish watching it. But that whole season to me was just unbelievable. Now, we didn't have a dynasty or anything like that. So if you do want to talk about, you know, just a long run for a team, it would be the 49ers. I mean, I remember watching them in the late 80s, and they played Cincinnati. And I remember Cincinnati had a pretty good team. And they just throttled them. You know, Joe Montana and Jerry Rice, it just seemed like they could never be beat, even down to the last part of the game. I remember that real vividly about Joe Montana, that if he got to the last drive and he had the ball and he had to go down and score, he was going to do it no matter what. And he did it so many times. So that would probably be the team that I say, you know, had that kind of – that long run, that kind of dynasty type run.
Did they go 15-1 one of those years?
I don't know. I could ask my brother.
I think they did.
I think they went 15-1, but they probably lost early enough in the season. Yeah, 15-1. The 84 Niners went 15-1. They probably lost early enough that it never became a thing. Yeah. You know, like they were chasing down the 72 Dolphins.
Being six, I don't remember that one too much.
All right, young guy. Yeah. Tell us more about the roots of country music.
Yeah.
While you're at it over there. All right.
By the way, I don't know how many times I've watched that 1990 Super Bowl, more times than I can count. Had it on VHS when I was a kid. It was Stephen Baker that made the play. It was a 3rd and 13.
Stephen touchdown maker Baker.
That's right. Stephen and he fought through maker. Four tackles to go get that first down. Yeah. He only had 2 catches in the game for 17 yards, but one of them was that 3rd down where he got it. Otis Anderson was the MVP, finally had the chance to interview him for the first time this year over at the Super Bowl. I was freaking out. And Scott Norwood missed, I think, from 43 was the
yardage. So it wasn't a chip shot?
No, and especially in those days.
But he had plenty of leg, though. I mean, it was...
I almost want to say 47, but you probably know better than I do.
It was wide right by about 2 yards.
Yeah.
It wasn't like it was that close.
That's a dirty pair of words right there, son.
And Jeff Hostetler, you mentioned him. He saved the game probably for the Giants on a play where he was getting sacked in the end zone, switched hands with the ball when it got fumbled, and took the safety instead of giving it up for the touchdown to the Bills on that play.
I do remember that.
All right, that collectively was this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
The Arizona Cardinals and quarterback Carson Palmer have begun to have some contract talks. Palmer, who turns 35 in December, led the Cardinals to a 10-6 record last year. The Cards are currently 4-1 and lead the NFC West. Palmer has missed 3 games this year because of nerve damage in his shoulder. His current contract expires after the Super Bowl this year. Baltimore Ravens wide receiver Steve Smith has shut down his Twitter account, saying that he didn't feel like he was being a good example for his kids. On the social media outlet, said Smith, quote, "People are going to say what they want to on Twitter. Internet courage is great. Internet courage is like a cover 2 corner. You got a safety over the top. You feel better about yourself. You got that one-on-one coverage. You back off a little bit. That's how I look at Twitter." The Cleveland Browns, after originally hoping that center Alex Mack would be able to return late in the season, have now placed Mack on season-ending injured reserve with that broken leg. And last night, they ran 27 more plays, gained 100 more yards, one time of possession 41 minutes to 19, but they also had a 58-yard field goal blocked as time expired that would have won them the game in the end. Despite a pretty dominating performance on the stat sheet, the Jets fell last night to the Patriots 27-25. Tom Brady threw for 261 yards, 3 touchdowns in the win, 2 of those touchdown passes going to running back Shane Vereen.
Yeah, you look at a team that really couldn't run the ball last night and basically didn't even try to after a certain point was the New England Patriots. The Jets, 2 killer holding penalties in the red zone. One of them took a touchdown off the board, and then they gave up a touchdown on 3rd and goal from the 19-yard line as well. So all that conspiring to do them in last night. 641-1010, if you'd like to get on board. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Steve Smith said, further in that story, really the criticism that he'd get on Twitter was from disgruntled fantasy football owners. That's why Torrey Smith, his teammate, quit earlier this year, said, I'm just not going to deal with it anymore. And Steve Smith wasn't the kind of guy who would just turn the other cheek. He would go back at him. I resemble that remark. And that's just how I am. And so he said he finally, you know, his wife was like, what are you doing? He said enough was enough.
You know, for Twitter, when I was playing, I barely even opened it up. I would send out a picture of my kid every once in a while, that kind of stuff. But I do remember saying, do not go into this icon here when you're playing, because it's just fans and somebody sitting on the couch in their boxers watching the game, getting upset at whatever you did. You guys won, but they're mad that you had a pick here, or, you know, you didn't help their fantasy team out. So they want to chime in on your playing ability or your life. Maybe you had a comment after the game, and so now they want to comment on that. And I'm like, I tried to get into this was the funniest thing. I sent out a tweet, and it was not the grammar was not correct. So some grammar Nazi decides to attack me and saying, this is how you say it. This is how it's spelled. I can't believe you would put this up. And I'm like, geez, are you serious? So I kind of tried to comment back to him, and I was like, what am I doing this for? Who is this guy? Nobody cares.
Does it really matter? Right.
Yeah.
You know what it is? Back in the days of Real Country, like Roy Clark and the like, you know, you'd get the angry letter to the editor writer. Yeah. How many people are going to, you know, would really take the time, though, to write a letter, to put a stamp on it, to put it in the mail, and
no one
never get any feedback from it and just send it out there? But now it's just instantaneous. I mean, even more so than email, because you know that's popping up in that guy's timeline.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And some of the things are harsh. That's what kind of angers you to want to reply back to it. But it's just not even worth it. And I'm glad Steve Smith has done this. You'd like to see him be able to keep it and still keep his calm about things. But, you know, if you have that edge to you, and you know if somebody says something bad about you or a family member, that you're going to kind of fly off a little bit and respond back to him, even though it goes nowhere.
Within certain parameters. I mean, you got the guy. Who was the guy who called the game? Was it the Minnesota game this week? Did you see the Fox Sports, the play-by-play guy that they gave a shot? He's like a MMA guy, okay? And so they let him do a game, and apparently he was really, really bad.
Oh,
okay,
that's surprising.
He says snarkily.
MMA guy.
So he was really bad at it, and he made a lot of errors, to the point where, like, I think it was Greg Jennings caught a pass, right? It's Minnesota and Detroit. Greg Jennings catches a pass, and he calls him Golden Tate. Well, they both wore the same number, and, you know, the idea was, well, he must have looked down at a roster and just saw the first number 15. Yeah. It's like, these are not obscure players.
No.
You know, these are the starting players.
You should know those guys.
Whose game you're calling. And you know which team is on the field. So he was getting crushed. And apparently, he came back firing F-bombs, D-bags, and I mean, just on and on and on and on.
So he was a pass it to the man. And boom goes the dynamite kind of guy.
Yes, pass it to the man. He passes to the man.
And it was Reggie Miller. He's like, it to the man.
The man.
And boom goes the dynamite.
That's one of the all-time greats.
It is.
But so Fox is taking him off at least for 1 week, if not longer, at this point in time.
He'll come back from that.
He will not get the opportunity. And apparently he's had a history. Look, people right now are saying, you hypocrite. No, I come at you on Twitter, but I don't curse at you. I feel like you're gonna critique me, and that's fine. You have a right to. Why should I? You know, as long as I'm being
civil. But that, I mean, it's such a waste of time to critique somebody that don't know. They know you, but you don't know them.
But it's not even critique so much as just like
argue a
point, debate,
back and
right?
Forth
and they're like, well, I can't believe that you're responding to me. Why? What's the big deal? I mean, you took the time to write it to me. I'll take the time to write it right back to you. I
got
that.
Too many other things.
Oh, trust me. I don't do it. You couldn't do it all day long. You drive yourself absolutely crazy. But I enjoy it to a degree. The only time, by the way, the grammar police is acceptable is when someone is calling you out for being stupid. And they misspell, you know, like they use Y-O-U-R instead of Y-O-U apostrophe R-E, like you're stupid. Mm-hmm. Like my stupid what? What are you saying? Because you don't, you know, if you're going to call me stupid and you don't use the proper grammar while calling me stupid, that is the appropriate time. Then the grammar police is allowed to come out, in my opinion. But there you have it. All right. We are going far afield today. It's Jaguars today. Glad you're with us. We'll come back more with the quarterback, David Garrard, and we'll look ahead to how can the Jags put the game plan together. What do they need to do on the field this Sunday to get their first victory against the Cleveland Browns? We'll ask Dave's opinion on that. What should the game plan be, and how much success might the middle of that defensive line have in the absence of Alex Mack, who officially, by the way, went on injured reserve today for the Cleveland Browns. Saw that come across. Broken fibula ends his season. So out with him, and Paul McQuiston comes in, or he takes over at right guard. John Greco will handle the center duties for the Cleveland Browns, going up against Cedric Marks and Roy Miller this week. It's Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. What is this called, Lauren? Calling Baton Rouge, I hope, right? I hope.
Yeah, Calling Baton Rouge.
Okay. Look what you typed in.
Oh. Calling Baton Rouge.
Yeah, I was, that's interesting. I didn't know if that was the kind of
Can I blame that on my finger?
Absolutely. But
thank
then you're not blaming JOI for that.
No, because they just started today. Today was my very first therapy session.
Fixing it. It would have been a lot worse had it not been for JOI.
Exactly.
Beautiful. 641-1010 is the number if you'd like to get on board with David Garrard talking about the Jags and Cleveland coming up this Sunday, Dave. Got a team that's run the ball very well in the Cleveland Browns. Alex Mack is out for this game. The Jags clearly, they tried to sign him away from Cleveland in the offseason. Some people regard him as the best center in the league. How big of a loss is that to a typical team? If you've got a high-level player at that position to be without him now for an extended period of time, but particularly the first game, you're going to have to deal with him being out for the entirety of that game.
I would say it'd be a huge blow, because I would just think back to losing somebody like Brad Meester, who was the quarterback of the offensive line. I mean, he would get those guys lined up. He would tell everybody who they have at times, and you could just see the rest of the guys at ease with him out there. But then if somebody else got out there, they didn't have the same kind of ability to tell everybody who they had. They might be able to point the mic out and make the right line calls, but they didn't take it the extra mile to know that, okay, I know Khalif has a weakness in figuring out his exact man. And somebody like Meester would say, hey, you've got, you know, 48 there. He's coming down. You see the safety coming down? Those things. And so losing somebody like Mack, who is a Pro Bowl player, somebody who is their quarterback of the offensive line, I mean, it's going to be tough. You're not going to be able to fill those shoes with just anybody. And you can have a body out there, but that's going to put that's going to put more work on the quarterback, because he's going to have to help him out. You're going to have some snap difficulties. You're going to have things where it's not quite lined up just right as far as the ball in the shotgun, even under center. You might have a few, especially early, you're going to have those, because, you know, he's going to be a little nervous. He hasn't played that position this year, more than likely. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be a big blow, but I mean, they're still going to be able to operate. It's just not going to be quite the same for them.
I would be totally, not that I'd ever be good enough to play in the NFL, but I would totally be a Khalif guy. Who do I need? This really specifically that guy. Hold still, dude.
Yeah. Right, yes. Some guys are that way.
You've talked about this before on this show, but we always see it. 56 to Mike.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Why? Why are we doing this?
Well, that's telling the offensive line, if it's a run, it's telling them that we have him. We're pushing to that guy. Whatever we're blocking, if he comes into somebody's hole, you have to pass the nose tackle off to the center, and then your guard has to pick up him. We have that guy. It's really important in the pass game, because it tells everybody, protection-wise, who they're going to. Now, that just because they call the Mike 51 doesn't mean that's who they have. They're just saying Mike is 51. Now we have the next guy to his right. So that's telling the offensive line, Mike is 51, but we all have 49 and the down four guys. Quarterback, you guys have the mic, and the running back has whoever's lined up next to the mic, the wheel now. And I don't know what the whole auto and that's not my kind of defense.
See, it confused you. Threw an auto and a wheel
yeah,
in there. You're not going to know what to do.
We didn't. When I was playing, we didn't have that.
52's the
lingo.
Leo.
Yeah. So you don't call everybody out, but that just tells everybody, okay, Mike is 51. Now the offensive line knows they have, say, 49. as the Sam, and the running backs know that they have 50 as the Will, and the quarterback knows that he has the mic. If he blitzes, then I've got to throw hot here, or I can tell the offensive line, okay, they said 51 is the mic, but I see that 51 is blitzing, and I want y'all to pick him up. The other two linebackers aren't blitzing, so they would make a Liz or a rip call that moves the line one guy either way. So if I move it one guy either way, now the offensive line knows, okay, 51 is no longer the mic. Now it's 50, but we have 51 because we think he's blitzing.
How do you accomplish any of this when you're on the road and it's a loud environment?
The offensive line usually still can hear the center. So if he still says 51 is the mic, the line is not going to necessarily hear me unless I go up there and yell it to them. You'll see quarterbacks go up and yell right at the back. They're saying, hey, no, Mike is not 51. It's 49. Mike is 49. And they all have to talk to each other because it's loud. So, hey, he said Mike is 49. Mike is 49. And then I have to get back there and tell my, if I'm in a shotgun, I got to tell my tight end or running back, whoever's back there with me, I have to tell him, we've changed. Mike is 49 now. Mike is 49. So that just clears it up for everybody to say, okay, Mike is 49. Now we know who we're picking up as the guys who are in protection.
At what point in your football career, from a young guy on as a quarterback, do you recall pointing out the mic? Is this always, I mean, is this now taught from the very lowest level, or is it high school, or at what point is this level of complexity or protection talked about?
I would say it's the different offenses. Some coordinators don't have the quarterback call the mic out. Sometimes it'd just be the center. As he gets up there, Meester did it all the time. He would just get up there and say, Mike's 51. And I knew that. I would tell the running backs if I was in shotgun, I would tell them too. But everybody sees Meester doing it. Everybody sees Meester pointing out the mic, or if he's switching it, then he's going to point out the new guy. And I have to be able to relay that to the running backs that are back there with me. Or if I'm under center and it's loud, I might have to turn around and say Mike is whoever the mic is. So you're doing that from day one once you get to the league, and they're even doing it a little bit in college. But that is very easy to figure out. And usually you're just trying to figure out the middle of the three backers. Now, there's sometimes where you get certain looks where the safety comes down, and he becomes more of the threat now. And so you have to make the safety kind of one of the backers. So you still have to figure out who the middle of those three guys are now. And you're not necessarily worried about the other outside backer that's covering a receiver outside.
You see occasionally defenses that will, you know, like on offense you hear the term muddle huddle,
yeah,
right? Where it's not really a huddle. They're just kind of standing around. You see some defenses.
Amoeba defense.
Right.
Yeah.
How is that? Now, more difficult to deal with, or is that something where you're like, you know what, these guys are not set, I can take advantage of these guys?
It is, it's more difficult to deal with for the offensive line because now they have to figure out kind of which one of these guys are coming. And the way that they do it is, we're just blocking these five guys here in the middle. So we're not worried about, you know, guys moving around outside of the box. We're just worried about five guys on the inside, and then I have to be able to know that, okay, this is a down lineman, this is a down lineman, this is a down lineman. This is a linebacker that we know likes to blitz all the time. So you figure out who the rushers are. And once you figure out who the rushers are, then you can say, okay, now these two other guys, I have to keep my eye on one of them, because if one of those guys come, now I'm hot. So you're having to look at those guys a little bit more often, unless it's just the right amount of number of guys in there that your offensive line can pick them up. Then you're not worried about it, because you can see the shell coverage. And usually when you have a shell that's a too high safety, you know that they can't bring but so many guys, because there's not enough guys down in the box to be able to apply a lot of pressure. Now you still have to worry about guys just kind of roaming around, so they get edgy. They can split the guard and center gap a little bit easier, because they're not just lined up stagnant on the line of scrimmage. They're moving around.
You want to coach one day? I mean, seriously, this all is, obviously you play quarterback for a long time, but this really rolls off. You clearly have a grasp. If people could see the way you're smiling as you do this,
yeah,
this has got to bring back you know, good it memories does. That this is what you train so much of your life
yeah.
to do. You know?
I do. And I guess the thing for me in coaching is there's so much time involved. There's more time involved in coaching than there is being a player. And, you know, I would just miss the times in the fall, the times at Christmas, the times at Thanksgiving when I was a player that, you know, I wanted to give myself a chance, you know, when I'm done officially to be able to enjoy that. But there is a part of me that wants to be still around the guys. And, you know, if I'm not playing with them, then I am still, you know, kind of giving knowledge to them. And maybe it's not on a team setting. Maybe it's individually helping guys train, helping guys in the meeting room, helping guys on the board. You know, so maybe it's young guys that are trying to develop into quality quarterbacks.
You should try, like, radio or something like that as an analyst or something. You know, we started the day out with Football 101, and I think we skipped the 200 and 300 level.
Yeah.
And we just went to QB play 401.
And I'm trying not to say too much and give too many things that a football player would know to where I'm trying to say a little bit more of layman's terms.
That's layman's terms you just gave us is what you did.
Yeah.
Something about the Liz with the moving the offensive line.
Yeah,
I've never
Liz,
heard that
you're,
before.
Liz, you're moving the offensive line from this guy to one guy to the left. A rip call moves it.
Okay,
from,
so it's all right.
One
LLR,
guy to the right.
Yep. I got
yeah,
you.
Yeah, and then a Larry would move it two guys.
Okay.
Randy would move it two guys to the right.
Okay, the longer R word. I got you.
Yeah.
All right, I'm trying to think of the long R word, Tony. That would rigatoni might move it three guys over to the right.
No, if you move it three
rigatoni,
guys, now you're just
middle linebacker is now the corner.
Yeah, and sometimes the corner is a part of the three guys because you can tell that the safety over top of the corner is lined up really wide outside, so he is allowing the corner to blitz.
Yeah.
So he is lined up really wide. So you see that watching film during the week, and that helps you to be able to slide it all. And now you're not going to slide it all the way. Well, you are going to slide it all the way, but you're going to move the whole line to that side. So that's where you see the running back run to the left, and he just picks up or waits there for anybody else. But the whole line just starts going to the right, picking up anybody that comes from that side.
Will any of this help Derek Marks and Roy Miller take advantage of the XFL and SMAC tomorrow? What do you know? In all seriousness, you look at this Cleveland team. They like to run it. I don't know if they'll be as successful running it, but is everything they kind of do? Because you look at the wide receivers, not a special group without Josh Gordon in there. Mm-hmm. You know, Jordan Cameron's a good tight end, but he had been very quiet this year until last week. Is pretty much most of what they do predicated on their ability to get Ben Tate and Isaiah Crowell going in the running game.
Yeah, I think without Mac out there, you'll see early on, they're not going to be as efficient as they would like to. Now, as the center starts to get more comfortable in the game and the quarterback understands, okay, these are the things that he's missing. This is where I got to kind of pick up, the other end of the bargain here, if you will. They'll start to get a little bit more comfortable with each other. There probably will be not snafus, but you'll see that there will be some, you know, communication and some handling of the ball that maybe not that great, some snaps that aren't perfect, but they'll get into the flow of the game. Hopefully it does hinder them for the Jags' sake. Hopefully it does hinder the run game and they're not able to get the right calls because of the center and you know, guys are, you know, off the mark and not where they should be at certain times and allows our defensive line to get into the backfield and create a great push. So, but, you know, that's all when you see the game start and you see how they're performing out there.
Quickly, Loggy said earlier in the week that he thinks this could be a good game for Marquise Lee because he thinks he's, you know, better designed. His skill set is better to work against man coverage. Cleveland likes to do a lot of that. As a quarterback, did you prefer a certain style, zone, man, different looks, or did it depend, you know, good personnel can make any defense effective against you?
Yeah, I loved seeing man coverage because I knew it was just me putting the ball in the right place. When it's zone, now you got to watch out for other guys sliding into that zone, people that you weren't expecting to be there. Now they're, you know, in the way or you're trying to hold the ball so that they can get through two or three windows, if you will. But man coverage, you know, hey, It's you and him. Go out there and win. I'll put the ball in the best place, and you come up with the grab. And there's not a whole lot of trickeration. It's just, man, it's, you know, zone. They can trick you a little bit. They can, you know, make you think it's one thing and roll to something else. Where, man, you know, you just go out there and play ball. It's more backyard football now.
By the way, final thing, pop quiz for you. The original Amoeba defense. How far back? What was the original Amoeba defense? Do you remember?
Well, for me.
It's not a football reference.
Oh, UNLV.
Yeah, man, I had a baby right there. All right.
I was a little UNLV fan when they came out with Stacey Augmond.
Was the Amoeba defense year.
Oh, yeah. I actually, with the little bit of money I had in the eighth grade, I actually bought some clothes. I had the little bucket cap that had the little UNLV guy on it, and I think I bought a t-shirt or something like that.
Is that like a Kangol or just like your standard bucket hat, like a fishing hat kind of?
Yeah, like a fishing hat.
I just didn't know. Because some Kangols kind of look like bucket hats.
Too. Yeah, this was more of the kind of squared off top.
I got you. All right.
Yeah, so.
UNLV back in the day.
Loved it, man.
Who else?
They had
Anderson Hunt.
Stacey Augmond. Didn't they have Larry Johnson?
Obviously, Larry Johnson.
Larry Johnson.
Right.
And then,
George Ackles.
Anderson was the point guard, lefty.
He's on TNT. Yeah, Greg Anderson. Greg Anthony. Who was one of the best sports analysts, bar
none.
He really is. If you don't love basketball, you probably don't like him, but that guy, I can listen to him talk.
Yeah.
I can listen to Harold Reynolds talk baseball all day long, and I can listen to David Garrard talk some football. Holy smokes, was that amazing. All right, it's Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Since 1905, Claude Nolan Cadillac serving as the preferred Cadillac dealer right here in Northeast Florida. They've got the largest selection of new and pre-owned Cadillacs in Jacksonville with absolutely no dealer fees. And by the way, they're the only Cadillac dealer here in North Florida to sell and service the ELR, an on-site body shop. They'll paint and repair any model, and they're guaranteed to offer the highest level in customer care and service. The elegance and experience of driving a Cadillac one step away. Build your lasting relationship by logging on to claudenolan.com or visit them at 4700 Southside Boulevard. Call them at 642-5111 for Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor on Jaguars Today. Coming back, we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight, your keys to victory for Week 7 in the National Football League for your Jacksonville Jaguars. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
This ain't coming from no prophet.
Just I would say that 99.9% of the response today to the Garth Brooks conversation and the saloons being soft has been overwhelmingly positive. The one guy who wasn't, it's been nice knowing you on Twitter. Okay? You took it a little too far today. There's certain things you don't critique, and it has nothing to do with me. So I'm just going to leave it at that.
You enjoy don't critique Twitter. Garth Brooks. That's who you don't critique.
Well, that goes without saying.
But you can critique saloons for days.
Well, did you see the picture of the guy who tweeted the En Fuego Sports Network at Jags?
Yes.
Outsiders? That was awesome.
I love
Coyote
it.
The Ugly has lost its edge. It's a bunch of dudes dancing on a bar in tank tops.
Oh, horrifying. How far the saloons have fallen.
Hashtag saloons are soft. They are soft.
It's a new hashtag.
It's the urban cowboyization of America.
A couple weeks ago when the Colts were in town and they went to a shot of the pools and it was like five of the six people in the pool at the time were guys. Yeah. And there was like this little low boo in the crowd. It was like, boo.
Right.
This isn't what we brought these for.
Is that sexist? I don't know. It's just, it's reality.
It's for the lady that was fully dressed in the pool. That's
right. Jumping in jeans on a 70-degree day.
That was on Come On, Man.
Full Duval.
That was on Come On, Man. I've been up there a couple times. It's awesome if you do get the chance to go. Have you been up there, David?
I have not.
Oh, you should.
My son is
break out of the
like,
terrace.
Daddy, I want to go to the pool. I'm like, no, I don't think. I don't think you should be at the pool.
Oh, you'd be a hit in the pool, man, because you got the guns. You'd be out there in the tank. You'd be like, yeah, let me take the tank top off.
Can you imagine the video board showing David Garrard in the pool shirtless? How crazy the stadium would go.
They'd go insane. Are you?
We've got to arrange that.
All right.
That would be hilarious.
I feel horrified just discussing this right now. Today, we ask you, as we do every Friday, and apparently you haven't come up with the right ones, because we ask you for your keys to victory every week, so I will blame it on Twitter once again. The Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. What are your keys to victory, Tony? What do we come up with?
Here's what we got from at Irish Jaguar. Number one, Jess. Number two, win. Number three, please.
Please.
So just win, please, from Stevie. From Jeff, we got run the ball, stop the run, run the ball. Hashtag run the damn ball. From Fun Guy, we got play better, take advantage of depleted offensive line, and score. From I Believe in JR, one, convert third downs. Two, stop Brown's ground game. And three, get the ball downfield. From Eric, we got stop Tate. O-line has to run block better. And three touchdowns from Bortles. Hashtag beat the Brownies. Hashtag go Royals. From Duval Doom, we have destroy Hoyer. Score points. Please, God, just win. I don't even know how anymore. Just do it. From Joey, we got stop the run, try to run the ball, and hit Hoyer. Boring but true. Hashtag just win, baby. Hashtag shut up, Randy. From Owen DeVille, we got run the ball, catch them, don't drop them, and more scoring. Hashtag half-eaten donuts. Hashtag
that is a donut. Person who listens to the program right
By
there.
The wait, way, wait. Did you see that Blythe?
Heels, ladies. Yes, what?
Did I'm you see sorry. That she... No, I'm stepping on your toes. Did you see that she said she did not eat the half-eaten donut? Because she knows for sure because she ate two full donuts.
I ate two. She stopped. Well, somebody then ate one and a half donuts. The Helmets and Heels girls do the show in here, the ladies, on Tuesday night, and they left us some leftover donuts, and one of which was half consumed.
Yeah.
And well, not a treat for it everybody. Was. So it's made the hashtags now.
And from Christoph, we got run the ball. Number two, protect the ball. Number three, win the turnover battle. And number four, I'll allow this. Laugh at Johnny Clipboard.
All right.
There you go.
Oh, I got on Facebook here, defense, defense, defense. That's one. Let's see. I think that was the same one you just did. John Shannon said, Bortles throws down the field. Defense forces a turnover. Running game is over 70 yards. These are very easily attainable. Number four was hashtag Jaguars today, by the way. Nicely played, John. John Duraskovich, Beatles and Jokel dominate. Bowanko, Linder, and Pastor tread water, stuff the run.
Okay.
I think, yeah, well, I guess if they just do what they've been doing, he says, and those guys step up their game maybe on the left side, we could use some of that. A lot of run the ball, but I thought that was such a reasonable run. The running game is over 70 yards. We're not asking for all that much, are we? Right? I'd like to see the tailbacks have 70 or 100 yards, right? That's the running game, Dave. And I know it's great, and you added that element, and a lot of quarterbacks have, and especially in today's game, but Blake Bortles is not Mike Vick. You know, he's not going to run very often, challenge that 100-yard mark. Right? You don't want that to be your running game with this football team.
You don't, but if he adds to it, that's
absolutely
fine. That's fine. If you get 120, 130 yards rushing and he has 40 yards of it, that's okay because, you know, the chains are moving. You know that he is allowing his team to get down the field and giving them an opportunity to get into the red zone to score points. I think it's get into the red zone, score touchdowns, you know, blitz the Browns. They got that new center out there. It's not the quarterback, but still, to get the calls made right, to have all the offensive linemen going to the right place, you know, I'm gonna blitz them more. I'm gonna blitz them so that I can also blitz to stop the run as well. So that's what I would do, and then just let the offense continue to get better, continue to work, continue to make plays. Like somebody said, let Blake throw the ball down the field, and just for him to be smart with the ball, but to still be a gunslinger like he is.
We got to see points on the board, man. I said last week, I might have even guaranteed it, Tony, for what that's worth. A radio guarantee that didn't come to pass. I may have guaranteed if the Jags defense played as well. And to me, when the defense played as well, look, they only give a 10 against Pittsburgh, right? But so what? They 16, they played well enough to win the football game, right? So, I guaranteed if the Jags did that again this last week that they'd win the game. Didn't happen. So offense has got to get it going, man. That's just the bottom line. They've got to find a way to put some points up on the board, whatever fashion that comes in. Or, as you said earlier, special teams. You know, that's the one thing you don't count on. It's the hidden whatever, but
hidden points.
you know, kickoff return, jump on a muff punt, something just to turn the tide of the football game and not put it on your offense to continually drive, march down the field, 8, 9, 10, 12 play drives.
It's a big morale booster when you get a 30-yard return and you're like, man, now we're starting at the 50-yard line. All right, here we go. We don't have far to go to get points. We don't have far to go to, you know, and then so everybody is getting pumped up. The crowd is into it. Special teams plays a big part, and even though they don't get a lot of credit a lot of times, they play a big part in the morale, the excitement, the energy in the stadium, the energy on the sideline. So special teams is a big part for this weekend.
How you feeling this week? I know we said at the top of the show, it's very tough to pick them to win this game.
Yeah, you know, Brent Martineau said it last week. You know, they're going to have to show me. You know, I want to pick them this week, but they're going to have to show me. They're going to have to get a win to show me that they can do it, to show me they know how to get a win.
If Martineau said that, wow, that's like caustic
remarks. The rainbow was a little darker.
Holy smokes, man. What happened to the yellow crayon? We left that one out of the spectrum. Man, that's a shocking rebuke from Brent Martineau. What about you, Tony?
You know, look, this Cleveland Browns team, we're all curious to see what it's going to look like without Alex Mack in that run game. They got one of the best in the league, and I remarked with Ryan O'Halloran about this yesterday. Watching Cleveland in the last couple of games, I don't think any team in the league runs more two tight end to get their run game going. And when they don't have two tight ends on the field, they almost always have a fullback on the field. They are so run focused. And the big plays that they've had this season have come because they are able to run the ball. They get those play action plays where they only have two receivers in the route half the time. And it's just Brian Hoyer has been so efficient at forcing the ball downfield for this team to this point this year. How much does the loss of Mack affect their ability to run the ball? I think there's a number in there somewhere for the Jags where if they can hold Cleveland to somewhere around 100 yards rushing in this game, they have a chance to get themselves in this ball game. They haven't been great on the defensive side of the ball. I think they're 23rd against the pass, 30th against the run this year for this Cleveland Browns defense. And like you said, Mike, it's about points. It's about this offense. Instead of finding ways to put together 9 or 10 play drives that end in field goals or turnovers, put it in the end zone 3 times and put some pressure on Cleveland to have to do the same thing because they haven't forced an opponent to do that yet this season. Can they finally do it this week against Cleveland? I think they got a chance to because I don't see anything on tape from Cleveland that scares me, but they've just been so efficient at what they want to do and what they want to be that they've been able to dictate to other teams to this point in the season. If Jacksonville allows them to dictate again this week, then, yeah, they're going to lose this game.
Red zone efficiency is so important. You see last night the Jets can statistically dominate a game but settle for field goal after field goal after field goal,
yep,
and it ultimately costs them the game in large part because of that. And the other thing is guys like Hoyer should be why, as a Jaguar fan, you should be ecstatic about Blake Bortles, because Brian Hoyer, to me, I compared him to Kirk Cousins. I know Kirk Cousins lit this team up earlier this year, but go look at him. He's physically limited, Dave. He is as good as the talent around him, and sometimes not even as good as that. Those guys, in my opinion, do not have the ability to lift a team on their shoulders. Now, I know Blake hasn't lifted this team to wins yet, but the fact that he can go out right now in the circumstances that he's in with the youth on that side of the football, on as many rookies as they're playing, no running game whatsoever, just a couple of starts on his belt, throw for 336 yards, be in the top 6 in the league in completion percentage among quarterbacks, this guy can win and he can elevate other guys around him. And it's not like I was preaching that from day one. He's opened everyone's eyes. Maybe you were a full-on believer and always believed that from the moment he was drafted. Good for you. You were correct if that's the way you felt, because he does have the look of a truly special player about him, and that if he gets just average NFL help on a given week, he is capable, I think, of some special performances.
Absolutely. He's made me a believer, and you know, we just want to believe in some wins now, you know, and it's special teams, it's defense, it's offense, it's everybody coming together and, you know, being a cohesive unit. And let's walk out of this stadium this weekend with smiles on our faces, not because we kept it close, but because we got to win.
There you go. And I'll leave you on this note from Alex Roll on Twitter at AJRoll31. I'm picking the Jags to win this Sunday, and I have $5 on it. Hashtag Jaguars today.
Boom.
Hashtag first win of the season for the Jags. That's a man who's backing it up with his own wallet. Way to go, Alex. We should all be as confident as Alex Roll. There you go. That does it for us today. Outstanding work by you today, homie. Holy smokes. We need to get Loggeman and Garrard on Football Jeopardy. All right? Schematics Jeopardy on the whiteboard. Dueling schemes and all that stuff would be absolutely must-see and must-listen to radio, television, whatever the case may be. Where will we see you this weekend coming up? With the boys, Fox 30, CBS 47?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 11:30.
All right, there you go. Check him out. Getting you ready for kickoff on Sunday. Thanks to Claude Nolan Cadillac for bringing the show every Friday. Hey, thanks again to our friends at Foundation Professionals of Florida. Gave away the tickets and the pregame passes. Sweet T-shirts. We got copies of those coming up today as well, Tony. And Kenneth Wayne was our winner on that in the old school Jaguar photo contest. Again, Foundation Pros of Florida, 287-2690 or foundationprosfl.com.
I also want to say the Susan G. Komen walk is tomorrow, and you can go on and sign up and be on my team, Garrard Gridiron Gang, and you can come walk with us and have some fun for great calls.
There you go. He is David Garrard and one of the best, and he is Fat Tony, and she is Lauren Brooks, and I is Mike Dempsey. Thanks for tuning in.